This is a modern day genocide that we must stop. And I heard someone say it's a lynching. It's a modern day lynching. People in blue have the right to kill us, and they should not.
There's a real crisis in relations between Manila and Washington. This is going to cause a reexamination of the global balance of forces by Washington, and certainly that could also impact what Washington's plans are for Syria.
I pray you sing a new song.
Praise the God be on the mouths of the saints and a two-edged sword in their hand to execute vengeance on the demonic nations.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam. Today, as a storm Hurricane Matthew has pounded Haiti and pounds the southeast, policymakers here in D.C. are actually mulling the storms of war in Syria. We'll talk to Professor Gerald Horn about the dangerous game being played with war and peace. We're also continuing our coverage of D.C. protests and community reaction to the fatal police shooting of Terrence Sterling, an unarmed black man who was shot to death while on his motorcycle on September 11th. We'll hear voices from a rally and action attended by hundreds this week right here in the nation's capital. And finally, today is the release of the eagerly anticipated film, The Birth of a Nation, and throughout the show we'll be paying special tribute to the 40th anniversary of Stevie Wonder's opus, Songs in the Key of Life. As always, we have a jam-packed show for you today, but first, our headlines. A group of ex-U.S. intelligence officials is warning President Obama to defuse growing tensions with Russia over Syria by reining in demonization of President Putin and asserting White House civilian control over the Pentagon. The memorandum sent to President Obama from veteran intelligence professionals for sanity said in part, "We are hoping that your president's daily brief will give you appropriate attention to Saturday's warning by Russia's foreign ministry's spokesperson, Maria Zakharova. If the U.S. launches a direct aggression against Damascus and the Syrian army, it would cause a terrible tectonic shift not only in the country but in the entire region," she said. Speaking on Russian TV, she warned of those whose logic is, "Why do we need diplomacy when there is power? And methods of resolving a problem by power. We already know this logic. There is nothing new about it. It usually ends with one thing, full-scale war." Well, with me to unpack the growing tensions in Syria and in other spots around the globe is author and activist Gerald Horn, professor of history and African American studies at the University of Houston and a frequent contributor across the Pacifica Network. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning.
We are trying to unpack this situation, the growing tensions in Syria and other hot spots around the world. And I wanted to first get your reaction to the latest. Before you came on, I read, I guess, a piece of a letter written by the group Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And Ray McGovern is one of the people in that group. And they were basically warning President Obama to basically tamp down this fierce rhetoric that's happening and to take heed to the warning given by the Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson about any proposed strike on Damascus.
Well, I hope your listeners realize this situation with regard not only to Syria, but the bilateral relationship with Russia is rapidly spinning out of control with potential consequences too ghastly to contemplate. Point number one is that if you look at the column by Patrick Lawrence in The Nation in the past few weeks, you'll notice that he particularly excoriates the Pentagon, more specifically Secretary Ash Carter, who he says has been disregarding the words put out by the civilian leadership, including President Obama and Secretary Kerry. This is extraordinary. It's extraordinary not only because it violates the basic precepts of how the United States is supposed to be run, but also because, if you recall, in recent years, the Pentagon has been more dovish than the State Department, at least when Bob Gates was head of the Pentagon and Hillary Clinton was head of the State Department. Recall that it was Bob Gates who tried to issue a cautionary note with regard to Libya, and it was Hillary Clinton and Samantha Power and Susan Rice who pushed forward aggressively. It seems to me that the civilian leadership is trying to heed the lesson of Libya, which has turned into a fiasco, and are stepping forward cautiously with regard to Syria. But the hawks, backed up not least by these laptop hawks such as Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times and other pundits, are pushing aggressively for a confrontation with Moscow over Syria. This came clear during the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing just a week ago under Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, where they were examining Syria. But what was striking was that they totally put in the back seat the concern about the Islamic State, the concern about Al-Qaeda and the so-called rebel forces and the so-called resistance in Syria, and were totally focused on a confrontation with Moscow with regard to Syria. This is a very dangerous and combustible situation that could easily spin out of control with consequences too ghoulish to contemplate at the moment.
So I have a clip of Ray McGovern speaking on RT, and he's basically saying that throughout this conflict, you know, the media and these pundits and these policymakers are missing, aren't really revealing the real elephant in the room. Let's go to that clip.
The elephant in the room happens to be a country called Israel. U.S. policy towards Syria cannot be explained without realizing that Syria poses no danger at all to the United States, but is perceived by Israel as posing a danger to Israel because through Syria comes the resupply for Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And so the Israelis have made it abundantly clear that would like to cut off that supply chain, and what better way to do it than to create chaos in Syria? It's in their documents. It's in Hillary Clinton's documents. Now, this is not a leak. This is not a hack. This is State Department released documents where Hillary Clinton said it will be a massive boon to Israeli security if we can remove Bashar al-Assad. She said that in April 2012. This is the elephant in the room. As long as Obama and his policymakers favor the objectives and interests of Israel, there's no way out of this quagmire.
That was Ray McGovern, former CIA officer on RT. And what's your reaction to that, Gerald
Horn? Unfortunately, the audio did not come through on my end, so you'll have to summarize what he said.
Well, he was basically saying that the elephant in the room is Israel, and that the policy of trying to remove Assad is basically related to that, and that Hillary Clinton, in her previous memos, and it's not through a hack or a leak or anything like that, had basically said that, you know, removal of Assad was very important for basically supporting Israel.
Well, I think there's something to that. I mean, recall that it's a matter of open record that Israel has been treating it in its hospitals fighters from the so-called rebel forces from Syria, even though there's credible evidence to suggest that these rebel forces are deeply influenced, if not infested, by Al-Qaeda and ISIS forces, which we are told are public enemy number one. The second point is that I think that from the point of view of Damascus and Moscow and Tehran and their Hezbollah allies, that they read the polls of the U.S. presidential election and they expect, rightly or wrongly, Secretary Clinton to prevail on November 8th, and therefore she will escalate upon arriving in office in January 2017, which has the possibility of helping to bring Al-Qaeda and ISIS to power in Damascus. And so that's led them to escalate as we speak in Syria, which, of course, is causing Aleppo particularly to come under fire.
Now, I'm kind of running out of time because we had some technical difficulties. But on this subject of U.S. militarism, I don't want to fail to mention the information that the U.S. is apparently building a $100 million drone base in Niger. And I guess this would be the first U.S. base of that type in Africa. Any information on that?
No, but there is quite a bit upon the U.S. facility in Djibouti in East Africa. In fact, I'll just say briefly that if listeners can get hold of the current issue of Le Monde Diplomatique out of France, which has an English edition, you may be able to find it online. You'll find a very interesting story about what's going on in the Horn of Africa and indeed what's taking place across the Red Sea in terms of the Saudi-U.S. war on Yemen. I think your listeners will find it very illuminating.
Okay. I've been speaking with historian, author, and activist Gerald Horn. Thank you, Gerald.
Thank you.
In this week's Black Lives Matter news, the New York Times reported that no New York City police officers are wearing body cameras, despite a judge's 2013 order to begin a pilot program for the cameras. Police said this week that a supplier has now been chosen and the program could begin in 5 years. In California, there were two more controversial fatal shootings by police. Protests continued in Charlotte, and protests also continued here in D.C. over the fatal shooting by D.C. police of Terrence Sterling on September 11th. Chantel James has more.
More than 500 protesters and supporters came out on the night of Monday, October 3rd, for a rally sponsored by Black Lives Matter, a protest in honor of the life of Terrence Sterling, who was shot last September 11th by police officers and died of his wounds. Organizers were also marking the third anniversary of Miriam Carey's murder by the Capitol Hill Police in 2013. Mothers of other victims of police violence spoke at the rally, as did members of Black Lives Matter. Cynthia DeShilda Dawkins, co-founder of the Coalition for Concerned Mothers and mother of Timothy Dawkins, speaks for the need of awareness of the NRA's efforts to block gun legislation.
I want people to be educated about how the NRA won't allow our Congress, by paying lobbyists, to keep common sense gun laws from being passed. So I'm standing in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter to let you all know we're not going to continue to be silent. They're used to us not saying anything. We're here today to make a point.
After the rally, the hundreds of protesters took to the streets, occupying the intersection of New York and New Jersey avenues. For On the Ground, this is Chantal James signing off.
Much more from this week's rally after headlines. In planet news, fossil fuels must be taxed out of existence to ensure that future generations are not saddled with a world of rising seas and extreme weather, according to a new research paper by renowned climate scientist and Columbia University professor James Hansen. The science has become crystal clear, Hansen said during a press conference this week to discuss the report, Young People's Burden, co-written with 11 other top scientists. Hansen added that we have to phase out carbon emissions over the next few decades. The research paper warns that the assumption that young people will somehow figure out a way to undo the deeds of their forebears has crept into and spread like a cancer through United Nations climate scenarios. Hansen added that one of the most important measures that can be implemented now is a steadily increasing tax on carbon and an end to government subsidies for the dirty energy industry. As the report was released, scientists also announced that September's carbon dioxide output failed to drop below 400 parts per million, despite historically being the year's low point for CO2 emissions, which means the Earth has very likely passed that symbolic climate threshold forever. The Earth has hit 400 parts per million before, but seasonal cycles have always reduced carbon dioxide output back below that level. Now climate scientists say that it's almost impossible that that will ever happen again. According to Climate Central, September is usually the month when carbon dioxide is at its lowest after a summer of plants growing and sucking it up in the northern hemisphere. As fall wears on, those plants lose their leaves, which in turn decompose, releasing the stored carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere. at Mauna Loa Observatory, the world's marquee site for monitoring carbon dioxide, there are signs that the process has begun, but levels have remained above 400 parts per million. Well, we want to go to our culture and media. We have lots happening here in the nation's capital. The Palestinian Film and Arts Festival is underway at various locations in and around Chinatown. And the Double Exposure Investigative Film Festival is also underway at the National Press Club. Celebrations continue for the 40th anniversary of Stevie Wonder's 1976 album, Songs in the Key of Life. Later in the show, I hope to offer my thoughts on the big movie opening today in theaters, The Birth of a Nation, based on the life of Nat Turner. But for now, those are our headlines and happenings. We'll be back with Voices of Protest of the September 11th fatal police shooting of Terrence Sterling by D.C. police.
Murder is despicable, it's disgusting. And they're taking it lightly while a family is mourning, while a community is mourning. There is no way that you can't take a black life in DC and not have it traumatize thousands of people. Just because DC isn't a majority of black folks anymore, it's gonna always be Chocolate City.
Come on now.
That's right. And whether we're moved out by gentrification, displacement, or whether we're killed every other week by a police department, this will always be Chocolate City. And I say that because at some point, DC has got to stand up for black lives. There's no more excuses. There's no more comfort. There's no more being afraid to sacrifice. What makes this movement different than the 60s? We get asked all the time. Absolutely nothing except for how willing we are to sacrifice. Real sacrifice. Are you willing to give up some of your privilege, whatever that might be, to save black lives? This is the question that you ask. Are you willing to look at your privilege? Are you willing to face it head on, face to face? Are you willing to admit how you are complacent with white supremacy at work? Class. Here in the District of Columbia, I live in Southeast, proudly living down in Southeast.
Southeast.
Where black folks, my neighbors, have been in that house for 3-4 generations. Nobody they know still lives there.
We came out of 3 years ago when this government was evicting elderly black folks out of their homes for $5 tax bills. The systematic attack on black lives in D.C. is far-reaching and pervasive. So while people out here that folks don't know, not being a state has even larger effects on black folks in D.C. We don't have a right to vote in a city where there are 60 police officers to each person. And I think people don't realize that because we talk about MPD, there are 30-something police departments in D.C. A week before Terrence was shot, there was another black man shot in Petworth by an MPD officer who also didn't have his camera on. This is why people in Charlotte took the streets. That's not something you have to be afraid of. Everybody is talking about how scared and how angry and all of that is. You cannot police this kind of anger. There is no reason that mothers are home grieving over their children. And that we allow their murderers to take 2 week leaves of absence with pay. After tonight, you are responsible. You have a duty somehow to plug into some movement somewhere or start one of your own.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Because every day I get emails about why isn't Black Lives Matter doing this? Why isn't Black Lives? Because we're not supposed to. It's a movement of everybody.
That's right.
Doors are open.
Because Terrence Sterling deserves justice.
That's right.
Because his family deserves justice.
Yeah, that's right.
Because the community of friends and loved ones that lost him deserve justice. And so don't let another day go by that not saying something means that you're complacent.
Come on.
And that's for all of us. It is not okay that your taxes are paying for these two men to stay at home. It is not okay that the FOP president decided that the answer to this was to reteach officers how to turn on their cameras. You can't turn on a damn camera. You don't need a gun.
Don't need a gun.
That's real. That's real.
Don't need a gun.
And so, and I'm gonna talk for a minute. This is why, because I was also in front of the Capitol today with Miriam Carey's sister. Today marks 3 years that Miriam Carey was shot in front of the Capitol and around the White House by Secret Service and Capitol Police. And she cried. Why? Because nobody remembers her name. We cannot let the same happen to Terrence Sterling. And so as you listen to speakers this evening, I want you to be serious about plugging in or starting somewhere on your own tonight, tomorrow morning. The first step, I gave it to y'all. You have the paper in your hands tonight. You need to take a picture next to Terrence Sterling's name on the other side of that paper. And you need to tweet it. Because by tomorrow, everybody in D.C. should be talking about this. Send an email. Send text to your friends. And then on the other side, you will also see you need to call Mayor Bowser. You need to call Kenya McDuffie. You need to have everybody else do it. Because they're also sitting comfortable. Some of us here sat in that courtroom last year and fought for these body cameras not to be bought. They took money out of education for these body cameras. And they're not even using them at the most critical time when they take lives. So while everybody was busy criticizing Black Lives Matter and Stop Police Terror and the rest of all of us who shouted down the mayor and all of those things, this is why. Stop making us say we told you so.
That's right.
Okay, so next, I would like to introduce two women that I love dearly. And through this whole time that I've been thinking about Terrence, I've been also thinking about both of their sons.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for being here because Terrence Sterling's life mattered.
That's right.
My name is Marion Gray Hopkins, and I am the co-founder and president of Coalition of Concerned Mothers. And we are an organization that, unfortunately, we are together for definitely the wrong reasons. Our sons were either murdered on the streets or they were murdered by police officers. And so this organization works very collectively and collaboratively, not only with the families, but with other partner organizations to bring about change. And April talked about change here today. My son, Gary Hopkins Jr., life mattered.
Right.
He wasn't a resident of Washington, D.C., but he was a resident of just on the other side of Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, murdered unjustly by the police 17 years ago. I've been on the front line, not only for a Coalition of Concerned Mothers, a recent organization, but I've been on the front line being a warrior since they murdered my son because his life mattered. And Gary was sitting on the edge of a car after going to a dance that he had every right to be at, broke up a fight that night. An officer, because what they feel that they can do whatever they want, blocks them from exiting the fire station in Lanham, Maryland, in Prince George's County. And let me just step back a minute because I want you to know who Gary was. Gary was a 19-year-old college student, full-time college student, a great kid. Not because he was mine, he was just an awesome, awesome person. Gary was a mass communications major. Gary was the comedian of the family. Gary was liked by everybody he came into contact with. He was a peer, he was a mentor to his peer group. He was well beyond his years. And Gary was an aspiring writer, an aspiring rapper. He performed all across Washington, D.C., and got a lot of accolades about his performances. So Gary's life not only mattered to me, it should have mattered to the world, because he had something to contribute to this world. So again, here I am 17 years later with an organization of mothers that want change, and we need you all to help us with that change. And I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but, you know, I don't have anything written today. But Gary went to that dance because I lost my husband just 16 days earlier. And he wanted to be out with his family. He had lots of family there. He had lots of friends there. And to witness this unjustly murder. We didn't have social media like we have today. So there weren't the video cameras. But we know video cameras don't matter. And I know it's important that they didn't turn the camera on to after Terrence's death. But we've seen across this country cameras on and there are no indictments. And I want to say that indictments are not what we need. We need convictions. Because if there is a murder by any one of us here tonight, they will be indicted and convicted and serve some serious time, okay? And so we can talk about New York where they found an officer guilty. And what did he get? Probation after being convicted. So we need to change laws. And part of the mission statement of Coalition of Concerned Mothers is we want to change laws. We're working to change laws, not only locally here in D.C., not only in Maryland, but across this nation. And again, it's going to require us votes. The voting season is coming up. We need a candidate that's going to be about what is important to our communities. You must vote. I leave here today, again, saying that Gary was unjustly murdered. The officer blocked him from exiting the fire station, gets out of his patrol car, and comes out, gun already drawn, comes up to the car where Gary is sitting on the ledge, waving the rest of his cousins and his friends on. They're coming back to our house. He pulls Gary off the ledge of the car with the gun to his head. Gary is stumbling to get his balance when he's falling backwards, and a second officer makes one fatal gunshot wound, ending Gary's death at the young age of 19. And so this is nothing new, people. Terrence's death is not new. This is a modern-day genocide that we must stop. Modern-day lynching. People in blue have the right to kill us, and they should not. So I beg of you to get involved. The Coalition of Concerned Mothers, unfortunately, we have mothers that have lost children, but it's open to all mothers. We partner with mass incarceration because we know that they are arresting and locking up our people of color at a disproportionate rate of any other race in America. And so we must make a change, but you cannot, as I mentioned earlier, sit on the sidelines and do nothing. I implore you to get involved. Thank you. All right. Anyone that wants to get in contact with the Coalition of Concerned Mothers, we're on Facebook at Coalition of Concerned Mothers. Our email address is cocmdmv@mail.com. And I have business cards for those that are interested. And again, we are united with the Sterling family. We stand in solidarity with the Sterling family and all that who have lost children across Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Well, across this country, we stand in solidarity with you. Thank you.
All right. Give it up for Marion Gray Hopkins and Cynthia Dawkins, y'all. That's what this is about. It's bringing together people who've been in the struggle for a long time, people who are just getting together. So if this is your first event at all related to police brutality, you're not too late. In fact, you're just on time.
That's right.
You know, I want to just, first of all, my name is Eugene. I'm with the Stop Police Terror Project. And I want to echo what April had to say. And the sound is echoing a little bit too, but I just wanted to get loud enough so y'all can hear in the back. Y'all all right? But I wanted to echo the point that April made about the importance of this case, of this Terrence Sterling case. We see so many of the things that happen all around the country with police murder and police violence. So many unjustified killings. The first case I remember I dealt with, Yango, you were there, Deontay Rawlings assassinated, shot in the back of the head, swept under the rug. And here we are, and they want to sweep the murder of Terrence Sterling under the rug. They want to act. We can't let it happen. We're not going to let it happen. Even our hometown newspaper had to have an editor come out and say that he had deliberately not written about it, but had written about cases all over the country. Jonathan Capehart, Washington Post, that's who I'm talking about. So even in our own city, our own media doesn't want to put it in front of people. They don't want you to know. Why is the nation's capital or the most powerful country on the planet Earth that claims to be a democracy when they go around the world bombing people? So they sure don't want you to know that right here in the nation's capital, that not only is democracy completely dead as it concerns the vote, but that black people are being shot down in the street like dogs and no one is doing anything. You know, one of the things that they say, because they always want to justify it, And they say, well, you know, he was riding a motorcycle and he came at the officer. Now, whether or not that's the story or not, which we don't know, it's funny because if y'all remember the video of the dude in Chicago who was shot into the car, and people were saying, well, you can't shoot into the car. And if you look at the Justice Department guidance, it says that even if the vehicle is being used as a weapon, never shoot at a moving vehicle. So even their own explanation, which is definitely not the full truth, probably a complete lie, even their own explanation doesn't pass muster for what should be a quote unquote legitimate action of that type, although I think they're all illegitimate. But it just shows you the reality of Metropolitan Police that no one is calling that out. So I think that this is an extraordinarily important event. I'm glad it follows another event. And I know some individuals who were out here, I believe it was last Monday, who shut down these streets around here. So I want to give those folks a hand, whoever was in the crowd around here. Because it's not a moment, it is a movement, as Ms. Cynthia Dawkins says, but it's only that if we have sustained action. So we have a whole range of folks who are out here today, from the friends and family of Terrence Sterling, to concerned citizens, to activists and organizers, but I would say every single person out here, you probably know at least five other people who think that this was wrong. So when we come back, you gotta bring those five people. And tell them to bring two people. And tell them to bring two people. Because we have to create a situation in this country. Let me tell you something. Civil rights did not happen because all of a sudden white people woke up and said, oh, black people need rights. It happened because the civil rights movement started to make the country ungovernable and started to embarrass them on the world stage. So I think if we're here in the nation's capital, where every single embassy and every single newscaster in the whole world, why don't we make Washington, D.C. ungovernable? Yes. And make Washington, D.C. and the United States of America look like who they really are in front of the whole world.
Yeah, that's right.
And the final thing I'm going to say before I hand it over is the mayor needs to stop thinking that she's sliding too. Muriel Bowser.
Hello.
Let's be 100% clear. She's talking about, well, I released the video. Look at how great I am. But let's be real. She was the one who pushed a pro-mass incarceration, militarized policing, so-called crime bill. It was the movement for black lives in this city that united thousands of people and had that bill shut down at the D.C. Council. And that, in fact, has some of the things we want put into another bill, including empowering communities to take care of their own security and not relying on police. And what does she do? She refused to fund it out of spite. So it obviously wasn't about murder. She didn't care about black people dying in the Southeast. It's about power. Yep. And she wants to look to the new white gentrifying population of D.C. is that no matter what, no matter how many black people they have to kill, they can feel safe when they walk around at 8th Street all night drinking. That's what it's all about. Creating a mentality of fear amongst black people and a mentality of power amongst gentrifiers, knowing that the police are there to back them up. Right now, but I just want to say to everybody that I appreciate you so much coming out. And I want to bring up this brother, Steven, man, who has been out here. He's a friend of Terrence Sterling, man. I want you to give it up for this brother who has been out there aggressively pushing us forward and helping us keep this movement going.
He should still be here with us. Say his name.
Of the killing of Miriam Carey, who was a black woman. Say her name.
Say her name.
She was a black woman killed here in the D.C. area outside the Capitol. And the reason why I'm very emotional today is because I spent the entire day with her family. Only 30 people came. Not a lot of times people do not show up for Miriam Carey, but she was a young mother killed with her baby in the back seat because she was making a U-turn. Today is the third year anniversary And I wanted to say that black lives do matter. And it's very problematic to say all lives matter.
Yes.
And we really need you guys to show up for Miriam's family. They did a caravan here all the way from New York to have, they had a butterfly release. It was so beautiful. And so at 2:15 p.m., which is when she was killed by D.C. police, we let go of those butterflies and they went in the air.
Capitol Police.
Yeah, the Capitol Police in D.C. Thank you, sister. Thank you so much. And so I just wanted to remind you guys that black women also matter.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
And before someone grabs the mic, I just wanted to say my name is Ashley Love, and I'm an organizer with Black Trans Women Lives Matter. And October 17th, thank you.
Black Trans Matter.
On October 17th, there is a hearing in Berkeley because a woman named Kayla Moore was killed by Berkeley police in her own home while she was cooking dinner. And they're trying to dismiss the case. But again, if you Google Kayla Moore, I would love it if you guys can get more involved in the case.
Kayla Moore's life matters.
And remember, the last thing we need is for black people to be saying all lives matter. Because a lot of racist people are saying that. So we need to stand tall. Black lives matter. And that means all black lives matter. Thank you very much. Thank you, brother, for letting me have the mic. I really appreciate it.
Good afternoon, comrades. My name is George. I'm with Pan-African Community Action. We stand against all forms of race, class, gender, and sexual orientation-based oppression. And our mission is to fight human rights, not just for civil rights to where they want to pacify things and give us little amenities and say it's okay. We're going to take this to the UN. That's why I heard the word mobilize. Y'all right. Y'all absolutely right. But see, this is the problem with I got with mobilizing. When they see you mobilize, they give you something what you want. They give them pacify. They give them, we're going to train them to do this. We're going to train them to do that. We're going to give them this body camera. We're going to give them this and give them that. And everybody go home.
It's over. It's not over.
That's why we got to go from mobilizing to organizing. We got to go from mobilizing to organizing to let them know that we set some, these are our demands, and they set in stone. And they set in stone. And we ain't go ahead. Because when we mobilize, they watch us disperse. They watch us disperse. And then all of a sudden, it's over. Everything honky-dory until the next damn tragedy happens.
That's right.
No, we can't let this slide.
No.
We can't let it slide.
We gotta mobilize.
Exactly.
We gotta mobilize.
Y'all gotta make some noise for real. Let the ancestors hear you.
Let's go.
I want to invite someone that I love very, very much as well. Hopefully, I did not tell her, ask her if she would speak.
She's gonna speak.
Okay, it's important that we uplift the family.
Come on, so
I like to bring Miss Beverly Smith, who's also a member of PACA and is the mother of Alonzo Smith.
Good evening, everyone. I was not anticipating on speaking this month. Some of y'all may know, this month marks 11 months since my son, Alonzo Smith, been killed by two special police officers in the Marbury Plaza apartment complex last November 1st around 3:30 a.m. in the morning. My son, Alonzo, was unarmed.
That's right.
My son, Alonzo, did not commit a crime.
That's right.
But yet he was heard by Marbury Plaza residents. First he was seen running, then he was heard screaming in pain, "Help, help, they're trying to kill me." He was knocking on residents' doors, pleading for help. The residents called 911. They called it in an assault in progress. The assault was on my son. By the time Metropolitan Police arrived on the scene, my son Alonzo was lying face down, handcuffed between the first and second landing, his head and neck hanging off the steps. My son at that time was dead. My son's case is still in the hands of the grand jury. It has been in the hands of the grand jury since last December. The medical examiner stated that my son's death is a homicide. It is a homicide. Compression of the torso. My son's neck appeared to be broken. These murders that these law enforcement are doing with impunity to our black and brown men, women, and children has to stop.
Yes,
amen. Like Brother George say, this is no longer a civil rights issue. This is a human rights issue. And we are taking these cases to the United Nations.
That's right.
Now, I don't know if any of you have been following the United Nations. United Nations was here earlier this year. My son Alonzo Smith was named in the preliminary report. He also was named in the final report that came out this month. Yes, we are taking, we cannot take one case. Like Brother George said, we gotta break down the state barriers.
Every case matters.
We have to bring all these cases of genocide against our people to one case and take it to the United Nations. Because we've seen over and over and over again that we're not getting any justice in the United States.
That's right.
We're not getting any justice. The grand jury is secret when it comes down to murders by law enforcement.
That's right.
Ex parte proceedings. What do ex parte proceedings mean? There's no defense. So if there is no defense, we can see blatantly with some of these videos that they actually murder individuals.
That's right.
So why do we not have any indictments? Why? Because the police department is an agency under the U.S. Attorney General Office. They are inherent conflict of interest.
That's right.
The prosecuting attorney has total discretion over the evidence to submit to the grand jury. So therefore, if they want an indictment, they will simply submit the evidence to get an indictment. If they do not want an indictment, they will simply withhold
the evidence that they have to not get an indictment.
And that's exactly what they've been doing right now.
That's right.
We need to overhaul the whole judiciary system. It is a racist judiciary system. And we have to tear it down. We need to tear it down. We have a systemic racist judiciary system. And we need to tear it down.
That's right.
Tear it down. Justice for Terrence Dowling. Justice for Alonzo Smith. Justice for India Kager and every victim police brutality.
That's right. Thank you. That's right, sis.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard voices from a rally this week held to protest the police shooting of Terrence Sterling here in D.C. by the D.C. police. And the rally was also held on the anniversary, the third anniversary of the shooting of Miriam Carey. And Miriam Carey was a young mother who, you may remember the case, she was downtown with her daughter. She made a U-turn at the White House, and a big chase ensued. And she wound up shot to death in her car with her young infant toddler daughter in the back of the car. The baby was unharmed. But there have been a lot of questions raised about the case since then and the initial accounts given by the police of why Miriam Carey was perceived to be a threat and why she was killed. And some of the voices you heard there included April Goggins, core organizer for Black Lives Matter DC, and the parents of many of people who have been slain in our area. Now, we don't have much time left, but I did want to give some comments on The Birth of a Nation. It's been very controversial, and I did have a chance to see it, and I wanted to at least give some thoughts, and I'll probably will make them more crystallized in terms of an actual review or something and post them on our website, onthegroundshow.org. But I just think that for those of us who have longed to see the story of freedom fighter Nat Turner on the big screen, that The Birth of a Nation more than fits the bill. If you don't know, Nat Turner led a slave insurrection in Southampton, Virginia in 1831, August 1831, 185 years ago, this past August. And the writer and director, Nate Parker, he's delivered a narrative that tells the story. And he also includes the role of religion and spirituality in a very, I think, in a very creative way. And it's a very integral part of his narrative. For example, the role of religion and spirituality, including how slaveholders used Christianity to try to justify and enforce slavery, even by having Nat Turner act as a sort of rented out preacher who would travel around to areas, preaching to various enslaved populations in the county so that they would be just cowed and understand that biblically that they should obey their masters. But, you know, that strategy kind of turned because he was able to understand and see around him the brutality, the debauchery, the horror of slavery, and he began to equate that with evil. And he talked about, he began to understand that there were other scriptures that the slave masters didn't want him to read or know about that countered the narrative about the obedient slave. There's also a presentation of African spirituality and spiritual tradition that really some of the enslaved people were able to retain and that helps to sustain them through this horror and this experience. So anyway, it opens today, The Birth of a Nation, about Nat Turner, and I would definitely endorse people going to see it. I know there's controversy about him, the director. He was caught up in a controversial case of rape when he was a student at Penn State 17 years ago, but he was tried and acquitted. And I really don't see how that is connected to me wanting to support this film about my history that I'm trying to understand. So anyway, The Birth of a Nation, and I'm going to flesh those thoughts out and present them on onthegroundshow.org. But that will do it for us on today's show for On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org. Thanks to our guest, Gerald Horn, and thanks to Chantel James for her reporting at that rally that we played in the headline and for much of the show. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella, and thank you for listening. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows and connect with us if you're interested in working with us on radio or digital media. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. I'm Esther Avaram. Raise your voice out there. Peace. We're going to go out with Saturn, another piece from Songs in the Key of Life. We've been playing cuts from that album throughout the show, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary. Raise your voice. Peace.
There's no sense to sit and watch people die. We don't fight.